welcome to another exciting edition of Sitting Around Talking Movies. I'm Neil Rosen, joined by, as always, Bill Bregoli.
I'm on 1 hour of sleep today.
And wow. Bill McCuddy.
We watch the bad movies so you don't have
That's right. And here's what we're talking about today. We're talking about a movie called Loving, which is getting a lot of Oscar buzz. Also on demand and in theaters, I think. My Dead Boyfriend, Bad Moms.
My Dead Movie.
DVD and on demand. And a movie called Trash Fire with the guy from Entourage, Adrian Grenier. How do you pronounce his name?
Grenier. Okay. I pronounce it washed up.
All right, so let's start talking about Loving.
No, let's talk about Inferno. That's the movie that Bill's seen that he went and discussed with the great Tom Hanks.
Bill
you
McCuddy
didn't even talk about that.
I did not see Inferno.
Oh, okay.
But Bill Bregoli did. This is
I
the
did.
Third in the series by the same author guy.
Dan Brown, right. You know, you could kind of tell how this movie was going to go because Sony invited a bunch of us for free pizza and beer and wine beforehand.
Really? I didn't get that invite. Did you get that invite?
Because they spend, baby. No, we weren't on that exclusive A-list, Neil.
Yeah, well, they did. They got us all liquored up and then brought us in to see the movie. And it's more of the same, to be honest. Although this one is less Catholic than the others, the mystery has to do with Dante's Inferno. And
a virus, right?
Yeah, and a virus that Ben Foster's character wants to release on the world.
They did a really smart thing with this movie. They released it internationally first so it would make some money and have some traction coming in the United States, and it still got beat by Madea, right?
I mean,
it's
right.
Still,
yeah.
Second week in a row, Madea wins.
Yeah.
I know. But
the first one?
The Da Vinci Code.
And that made a lot of money, right?
And then there's
Angels and Demons.
Did that make any
money?
Which
is on demand,
sort of
by
a lot
the way.
Of money.
Okay.
And then, but everything did a whole lot better overseas. And this one is just him spouting mumbo jumbo and running away from bad guys. And some of the bad guys turn into good guys, and some of the good guys turn into bad guys. And Felicity Jones is in it, and she's cute. And that's all I have to say about it.
And you spoke to Tom about it?
Tom talked about it, and he basically explained why he likes playing his character.
Because his mind is always seeing things that nobody else is. He's searching out patterns. He'll see a symbol that he can go back through all of history and explain what it means and how it got to have that meaning and its import to society. So he's always sort of the smartest guy in the room.
You know, if he'd been the smartest guy in the room, maybe he wouldn't have made this movie.
But he took home the check, so maybe he was pretty bright.
You know, Hanks is sort of one for three this year. Sully's his moneymaker. The King's Hologram and now this, or Hologram for the King, whatever, are both kind of stinkers. Or as Sean Connery would say, stinkosh. And is he in trouble, you guys? Is he?
Nah, he's Tom. He just hosted Saturday Night Live. He's Tom Hanks, man. This guy can have another, like, six bad movies, and he'll still be able to make movies. Then he comes in with some. And plus, Sully will, even though those other two movies didn't do well at the box office, Sully did well. They're even talking about nominating.
Does he get an Oscar nod?
There's even Oscar buzz surrounding possibly.
I'll guess where he's definitely going to get a Sully nomination, the Golden Globes.
Yeah, he's already getting an award.
The Golden Globes is ridiculous. I mean, it's a ridiculous voting organ. We've talked about that. But, yeah, so I don't know.
I don't recommend Inferno.
Okay.
There you go.
So we're off to a bad start.
All right, so let's move on to Loving. Okay, so this was directed by, oh, my God, the guy's name is escaping, Jeff Nichols. And he did Mud, and he did that horrible alien movie.
Come back, Mud.
It was that horrible alien movie that he directed.
I thought that was good. Was that the one with where we actually saw the spaceship come down?
Yeah, there was like
the
nod to Close Encounters.
Yeah.
I think I'm coming to the conclusion that I just don't like this director's style.
Well, I don't know.
And so this is about Mildred and Richard Loving, based on a true story, who were married in Washington, D.C. in 1958. And when they returned to their home in Virginia after the marriage, they were arrested because mixed-race marriages were illegal in that state at that time. And they were sentenced to leave Virginia for 25 years. And this movie is about their 9-year fight for justice. And it was a landmark case that went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And Joel Edgerton and Ruth Negga play the Lovings. And it was written, as I said, and directed by Jeff Nichols. And I thought that the performances by Edgerton and Nager are quite good. Edgerton in particular is almost unrecognizable. This guy's from Australia, and he's completely convincing as this Southern
bricklayer. But she's the lock
quite good
right
too.
Now for the Oscar nod.
But I had a lot, you know, I could not you know, I appreciate the historical significance of making a movie about this, but I think it's a missed opportunity. I think there's a lot of things wrong with this movie. And let's start with Bill McCuddy, because I know that you had some problems with it too. And then
well,
I'll
I just think the movie is shot through kind of rose-colored lenses. I mean, there's all kinds of scenes in this movie where normally someone would be yelling, "Hey, get out of our town," or "Riot." There's just absolutely no conflict for me in this film. We had some violent disagreements from some other critics earlier in the show that we explain to people every week. This is the after show for a weekly.
This is the after show for a television show that we do on New York One,
yeah, so,
and nationally on Time Warner Cable called Talking Pictures. And this, as Bill just said, is
David Fear from Rolling Stone and Lisa Rossman from our show were loving this movie. Sorry, no, I guess a pun intended. But I have to say that as great as the two performances are, it kind of drags. There's a portion in the movie
kinda,
where you only
really
know
drags.
That there's been a time lapse because they have another child. So it's kind of clunkily directed from that standpoint. And while their love story is quite beautiful, the rest of the movie doesn't – it's just not telling the story as well as I think
right.
it could be
First
told.
First of all, let's look at their love story, okay? We never get to see how they meet. Okay, other than about a 15-second moment when they're on the couch and Michael Shannon, who plays a photographer from Life magazine, captures them laughing at an episode of The Andy Griffith Show, you really never see their – I didn't really get much insight into their relationship.
Well, we don't know the backstory. We do know that he's very ingrained in her family, which seems completely improbable.
You don't really have insight into them as a couple as to why they –
No, no, but I'm saying we don't know their backstory, but we do know that whatever happened, he's like – he's beloved by her family, which is kind of crazy. They go to these car races where all of his white friends stare at him, and you just know trouble's boiling. But the trouble never really comes. The trouble comes when the sheriff, who says, "You can't be married, you went to Washington, D.C., you shouldn't have done that." And then the judge orders them out of the state for 25 years. In the meantime, she writes a letter to Bobby Kennedy, and suddenly the ACLU has decided they want to represent this case. That's all movement that happens, not by the protagonists, but by other people. And that's, to me, the mark of a bad movie.
Okay, well, first of all, I don't think it's crazy that her family embraces him. That
He's living with them, and they would have been run way out of
town. Problems with this movie. First of all, it's like you say, it's extremely slow-paced, and I think that Jeff Nichols, the filmmaker, leaves a lot of unanswered questions on the table. For example, to begin with, there's a scene where after they're told, "You can't ever come back to Virginia for 25 years, she's going to give birth to their first child." And
like an hour passes and they go,
and
we better get back to Virginia.
They decide to sneak back into Virginia. So his mother, who's – what's the term for that?
A midwife?
Delivers the baby. Why take the risk of taking that hour ride and going back into Virginia when the mother could easily have just come up to Washington, D.C.?
Yeah.
Okay, then there's obviously a traitor within their midst, because whenever they do go back to Virginia, within like 10 minutes, somebody gives them up and the cops show up. Okay,
we never learn who that is. It would have been really cool if
they never
had been
tell
the
you
mother
who that
or
is.
Somebody like that.
And meanwhile, they live there now in sort of some isolated house in Virginia where everybody knows where they are. The guy's working in town as a bricklayer, and nobody gives them up, and they're able to be there for 8 years. That's never explained. I think that's
we're going to be, and again, to use a bad pun, in the minority on this, though. I really want people to go see this film and then send us an email or tweet us, because we were really the only two people that thought this was that bad.
No, I don't
on
think
our show.
I think the performances are great. I appreciate tackling the subject matter, but you have
but
to make a more
deserves a better movie.
It deserves a much better movie. And plus, you know, nothing much changed in this couple's life. You know, it looks like when this landmark Supreme Court decision comes down in 1967. It looks like nothing has changed in their life. They're still living in this, you know, but they don't talk to you other than this brief clip of Martin Luther King on television, how much enormous sweeping change has gone on in the country, not only in the civil rights movement.
No,
in
Neil,
the gay
it's
rights
supposed
movement,
to be small and quiet,
in
we
the,
were told today
in the
on the show.
Right, in,
it's
in
supposed
the
to be
intimate.
Intimate.
Right, in the women's rights movement. I mean, the whole world was turned upside down, but not, you wouldn't get that from this particular movie, you know, and I think that, you know, this is a fault of Jeff Nichols.
All right.
You've got
an hour-long show
working
here.
You've got a great story here. And
if all we're going to do is piss on it, we got
to
move on.
It's too restrained of an approach to the whole story, and it's not terrible, but I think I'm with you. I think
Neil Rosen, what do you like? Tell me a movie you like this week.
Okay, I'm going to tell you a movie I like this week. I like a movie called Bad Moms, which is out on DVD. You saw that, right, Billy?
Oh, yeah.
Billy? Yep. Tell us about it.
Well, there are these moms.
They're bad.
They're bad. One of them's Mila Kunis, and she's trying desperately to bring up her kids and have a job with a bunch of slackers who sell coffee or something for a living. But she has to bring her kids in and out of school. Now, she's not a single mom. She just has a ne'er-do-well husband. And meanwhile, back at the school, she's being criticized by Christina Applegate's character, who's sort of the PTA maven.
Who, by the way, has a soldier or a sergeant at her flanking her, played by Jada Pinkett Smith, which is a complete waste of Jada Pinkett Smith. She's like, just showed up for this. I have no idea.
Yeah, I agree.
That's a small complaint about the movie. I like this movie a lot, but I think it's all Catherine Hahn. Catherine Hahn, man. As every raunchy guy is hilarious. And it's actually kind of a one-woman show with other people in it. When she's not on the screen, I'm not as interested in this movie.
Did you like it?
That's a good point. That's actually a very good point. She's so good in so many things, and she's not at all famous.
Yeah, we're big champions of hers on the show.
Well,
but you talked to Kristen Bell.
Yes, I did, and she was asked what she thinks when she sees a real mom misbehaving in public.
I haven't really seen any bad mom behavior. And I think if I did see it, now that I am a mom, my first reaction wouldn't be to categorize it as that's a bad mom. My first reaction would be empathy for whatever she has gone through in the last week that has made her snap.
Well, you know, I think this movie is very funny. You know, it's raunchy at times and sweet at other times. And I can't believe that this was written and directed by the same guys, John Lucas and Scott Moore, who wrote The Hangover, because it's so sympathetic to working moms and how overworked they are.
But I can believe it because it's definitely in the same wheelhouse.
I think it would be written by a woman, and I really like it. And
that's
I think
very
that,
sexist, Neil.
You know, well, I think that there's some great cultural references in here. One in particular, when Kristen Bell, who's the sweet and innocent one of the three moms, husband shows up, they're having drinks, the three moms, right. And the husband shows up and he's like, that's it, you're leaving now.
Starts ordering her around.
Yeah, come back, you're going back to the house now, you got to take care of the kids. And Catherine Hahn goes, okay, Ike Turner. You know, I thought that was a very, very funny line.
There's also a lot of good lines in the movie.
There's also a very funny moment where Kristen Bell wearing a sweatshirt, Catherine Hahn is giving her a whole dissertation on how to work with an uncircumcised penis, and Kristen Bell is actually, they used the hood of her sweatshirt to describe it.
Oh, you have to see it.
I mean, you have to see it. It's really kind of funny. And, you know, yeah, some of the characters are a bit cartoonish, like Christina Applegate, but I don't really care. I mean, there's a lot of laughs here, and it's a good time. And
there's a spinoff on the way. Did you know that?
Oh, really?
Oh, good.
Bad Dads.
Well, I don't know. I like this cast, and I highly recommend the movie. It's a great on-demand or DVD rental. All right, here's a movie that I did not like. Actually, I'll go to the one that I like that you hated, Bill. It's called Trash Fire. And did you see Trash Fire, Bergoglio? Okay. So Trash Fire is this wacky horror comedy movie starring Adrian Grenier from Entourage.
By the way, Bill not seeing it makes him the smartest person in the room. He's the Tom Hanks of this moment.
So apparently, okay, everybody is nasty in this movie, including Adrian Grenier's character, whose parents died in a fire when he was a kid, and he blames himself for that. He's living with this girlfriend, and they're both very they have bad sex. They're yelling and screaming at each other. But it's so over the top, it's so whacked out, that I actually think that, it's a dark comedy that's kind of spitting in the face of horror movie conventions, and it's nasty and insane, and it made me laugh, and I don't think that that's a bad thing. It's so out there that you're shaking
it. It deserves
your head.
To be way, way out there. Where
you
no one
like,
can find
you,
it.
You didn't like anything.
No, I think it starts out trying to be like American Psycho. He's this bastard idiot guy that is rude to everybody. And then it goes to the Bates Motel, or it goes to Creepy House. And None of it works for me. None of it seems at all interesting.
Interesting that you said the Bates Hotel, because the writer-director's name is Richard Bates Jr.
Yes, that's fascinating.
And I don't know. It's weird. It's what's your Johnny?
Weird. That is weird. Wild.
Weird and wild.
I did not.
I don't think it's a great movie on any level, but I think it's just, if you're looking for something really just different, this is different, and it's dark comedy. I mean, it's just insane. I mean, you know, the sister's a burn victim. She gets off on
that
watching,
is funny.
No. She gets off on watching Adrian's girlfriend Andre. That's just funny too. It's just so weird. It's just, I mean, I'm looking at this thing. It's kind of like with a slack drop jaw.
It's got an upbeat ending. Said no one ever.
Yeah. All right. So you didn't like it. Look, I'm not saying this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. I'm just saying it's. I give credit to like something different, and I laughed. That I think was the aim of the
Me
movie.
Me too. That ending.
All right. Here's a movie we both hate. It's called My Dead Boyfriend. And why don't you tell us about that one, McCuddy?
Heather Graham, in her mid-40s, plays a mid-20s ingenue. Now, here's another smart movie that Brigoli hasn't seen. This is basically, it takes place in 1999 for no good reason.
No good reason at all.
Unromantic comedy about a woman who comes home and finds John Corbett, her boyfriend, dead, sitting in a Lazy Boy recliner, holding a remote control, TV on, and basically then gets his ashes and walks all over Manhattan, bumping into people who knew this guy when he was a much more interesting character than he was when he was Heather Graham's boyfriend, which basically says, date Heather Graham and you turn into a complete loser, which is great for a movie. And it also says that this is a bankrupt kind of an idea. I know you're going to talk to director Anthony Edwards tomorrow. The guy from ER clearly needs an EMT crew on this movie.
He was in Law and Order last week.
Yes, he was. He was great. It's got a lot of people in it. Griffin Dunne, who I like when he acts, but he has the creepiest plot turn of any movie this year.
I like Griffin Dunne. I liked him in Chilly Scenes of Winter, a tremendous movie.
He's a likable actor.
I like him in the Martin Scorsese movie,
He's a
After
good director.
Hours.
He made, was it Practical Magic with Nicole Kidman and Sandra Bullock? Much better movie than it got. But he's lost here. He's got Gina Gershon doing a bad French impression from like an SNL sketch.
What is the problem with this? I mean, it's like, oh my goodness! Like, what kind of accent is this? She's embarrassing.
Give me those ashes.
Yeah. She's like what's that skunk Pepe Le Pew in the
Heather Graham walks around this movie with the ashes of John Corbett, and it's just spectacularly not funny. Here's the thing. There's nothing that really happens in this movie except she just walks around. It's not when you have misadventures for people, it doesn't make it a story. It just makes an hour and a half of time.
She joins a rock band to get more information on her boyfriend.
Rock band is called like Funky Cock or Beautiful Cock or some kind of cock thing.
That's what it's called.
What does she play tambourine?
Then it's
you've got John Corbett in a flashback sequence singing a version of the Broadway musical tune One.
Yeah.
A singular sensation from the
It's worth it just for that. Rent it for that alone.
Yeah, not so good. Not so good.
Do we have anything to recommend this week?
Yes.
Bad Moms.
We like Bad Moms.
That kind of week.
And I like Trash Fire, although you don't like that.
What are we talking about next week?
Well, we're going to do Hacksaw. You guys are seeing Hacksaw Ridge tonight.
Yeah, that's the Mel Gibson comeback, they say.
Yeah, we can.
And he's going to do a Q&A afterwards. I'll be really interested to know if anyone's going to ask him about anything outside of the movie.
So let's talk about Mel Gibson here. Okay, so apparently, we haven't seen the movie yet, but apparently it's getting good notices. It's supposed to be a good movie.
Andrew Garfield portrays the only pacifist in World War II.
No, I think is it World War II?
I think so.
It's World War II, yeah.
Okay.
When it looks at the helmets, it's World War II. Yeah.
Okay. So
he refuses to shoot a gun, so he becomes this like
first conscientious objector. Yeah. Okay. So can Mel Gibson, if this is a good movie, can Hollywood really forgive the sugar tits line and the anti-Semitic rant? I mean, is that it? Is it like, okay, all is forgiven?
You're back behind the camera. If you can allow yourself to, you know, Woody Allen had the same problem for a long time, or a little while anyway. I think America forgives anybody anything, but I'll be really interested to see if this is going to happen.
Do they forgive anybody in anything? I mean, really. I mean, if O.J. gets – I think O.J.'s up for parole next year. If O.J. gets out of prison, will America – he's walking down the street, oh, O.J., how you doing? Oh, so great. So, I mean, does America forgive anything?
I think President Trump is going to keep him in jail. I don't think he's going to let – uh-oh.
No, that's all right. Just headphones.
Steam just came out of Bill Bergoglio's ears.
Well, I
can
tell you, I actually met O.J. after the trial.
You met him after?
After the trial that he didn't go to jail for.
Really? How did that happen?
He was plugging a website called AskOJ.com.
Did you do it? And was that the first? Was that what everybody's question was?
Yeah, of course. Like, why have a whole website to say no?
They want O.J.'s take on things in the news.
And everybody, and talk about people being forgiven, everyone I worked with, except me, wanted their picture taken with.
Yeah.
So they all, and then O.J. noticed that I was kind of hanging back, and I realized what a controlling guy he was, because he was like, Bill, get over here.
He knew your name.
Yeah, he knew, because I was actually running the soundboard that
He
morning,
calls
so
me Bill,
was,
too.
But he said, Bill,
you
get
met
over
him
here.
Also?
Yeah,
so
I
there's
did
a
meet
picture
him
of
Fox
me
News.
And him somewhere floating out there, well, the two of us, and his head, by the way, is like 1.5 times the size of my head. The guy has a huge
Everyone
head.
In television has a big head.
Well, that's the sad part of our celebrity-obsessed culture. That
everybody has a big head?
No,
that people
want their pictures taken with O.J., that the Kardashians are famous for doing nothing, that it's really, I think it's spun out of control to a level where – you know. And getting back to the Mel Gibson thing, I mean, you know, he's made comments. I mean, he was – you know, blacklisted sort of in Hollywood. And I mean, is that it? You make a good movie and all of a sudden you're back in the fray? I mean, you know, when Michael Jackson died, all of a sudden, it's amazing. I mean, his tour was selling out in Europe, but his tours that he was planning on doing, which there's a movie of, was not selling well because of the pedophilia charges. And all of a sudden when he died, it seems like everybody forgot about that. It's like, oh, what a great, you know. So I don't understand.
So you're saying Mel Gibson needs to die?
No, I'm saying that I can't really forget what Mel Gibson said. And
Neil Rosen called for the death of Mel Gibson.
No, I will watch the movie objectively and review it objectively as a movie and not take my feelings towards Mel Gibson into account when I review the film. But I'm just saying, you know, I'm wondering if, like, you know, will it be at the if this movie is nominated for an Academy Award, will it be, if you remember when who was the guy that got the Lifetime Achievement Award at the Oscars recently, and half the audience stood up and
Ilya
cheered.
Kazan.
Yeah, Ilya Kazan, and half the audience booed. You know, so what'll happen if Mel Gibson comes into it? Will it be a similar situation? What do you think, Bergoglio?
Yeah, probably something like that, yeah.
All right, well, anyway.
You know, don't worry.
The show kind of comes to a whimper today. it just crawls to a close.
That's all right. Sometimes
So we'll have heard from the great Mel Gibson. I'm told I'm getting a couple minutes with him before the movie, and then he's doing a Q&A after. So we'll have that to talk about next week. And what great movies are opening?
Do you think that
we're getting
anybody
into Oscar
at this
season,
Q&A thing will ask Mel Gibson about the problems that he had? I remember one of
I doubt it. It's at the Directors Guild. I think that it's not. I don't think it'll have the audience that'll have somebody from the Daily Mail or somebody that would do that. I don't know who's moderating it, but I would imagine that it's going to stay very much on the film and. If anything, maybe Gibson will say something. I know that I'm not your favorite person in some regards, and
be a little self-deprecating and try
to. I've been sober now for a while. I hope everybody can put help. I'm putting it behind me. He did that recently in an interview. So, and he's like, "Really, we're going to keep talking about this?" So I have a feeling it's definitely on his mind. So we'll see. I don't know.
What are we talking about next week? We're going to be talking about Billy Lynn's long halftime walk.
Ang Lee's movie.
We're going to talk, as we said, about Hacksaw Ridge, which opens next week.
I think so.
Yes, I think it does too. We're going to talk about a movie called Operator, about
a stand-up comic played by Wade Whitman.
Mae Whitman.
Who we love.
And we're going to be talking about... two movies that are out on demand that I'm really looking forward to see and on DVD. One is Sausage Party, and the other is Indignation with Logan Lerman, Percy Jackson.
That's right.
All right, so tune in next week. Thanks for sitting around talking movies with us, and we'll sit around talking movies with you next week as well.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.